We're reading from the from the book of Matthew, chapter 14, verses 13 through 21. Now when Jesus heard this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. But when the crowds heard it, they followed him on foot from the towns. When he went ashore, he saw a great crowd, and he had compassion for them and cured their sick. When it was evening, the disciples came to him and said, "This is a deserted place, and the hour is now late. Send the crowds away so that they may go into the villages and buy food for themselves." Jesus said to them, "They need not go away. You give them something to eat." They replied, "We have nothing here but 5 loaves and 2 fish. And he said, "Bring them here to me." Then he ordered the crowds to sit down on the grass. Taking the 5 loaves and the 2 fish, he looked up to heaven and blessed and broke the loaves and gave them to the disciples. And the disciples gave them to the crowds. And all ate and were filled. And they took up what was left over of the broken pieces, 12 baskets full. And those who ate were about 5,000 men, besides women and children. May God bless this reading.
It is a privilege and a pleasure to welcome our guest this morning, Reverend Linda McCray, who is the pastor of Central Christian Church in Indianapolis. That is where many of our national offices are housed in that area, a hub of activity for disciples. And she's going to share a message with us, and we will learn about some of her other exciting ministries that have been a part of bringing her to this place and this time in her journey, and how her journey is shared with us. So welcome in.
Good morning. And thank you for the welcome. A word of thanks to your pastor, Laura, for this invitation, and to all of you for your warm welcome. The welcome is not quite as warm as I was warned it would be, July in Fort Worth. So far it's been pretty pleasant, but I just arrived yesterday and it was a nice breeze, so we'll see how the week goes. But it is a pleasure to be here along with many of our, I think about 5,000 of our brothers and sisters from around the U.S. and Canada and a number of other countries that are here as guests. And it's good to be with you in worship this morning to praise God and to reflect together on God's word for our lives. I don't drink a lot of soft drinks, but when I do, it would be diet something. It would probably not be cola, and it would definitely be cold. But warm, sweet Coca-Cola will always be for me a symbol of blessing. And that's because of people like Doña Angelina. Whenever I drink warm Coca-Cola, I will think of Doña Angelina, who lives in a village called Chaman in northwestern Guatemala. When I worked in Guatemala as one of your missionaries in the mid-1990s, Chaman was one of the villages that I visited often. In those days, it was a bit of an effort to reach there. You stood in the back of a pickup truck for a number of hours and then got dropped off and walked in the road the last hour or so to the village. I met Angelina on one of my first visits there when I was looking for her neighbor, who was someone that I knew through my work. I was planning to stay with his family, but when I arrived there, no one was home. Apparently, a relative in another area of the country had gotten sick, and they were off to visit him. As I was walking away from that house thinking, okay, what am I going to do now? Doña Angelina bustled up to me and said, "Who are you looking for?" And I explained the situation, and she said, "Well, you can stay with us." And so I did, and I did a few more times after that. And the time that I remember best of all the times I stayed with them was the evening that she fed us corn in 4 different forms. I should mention here that Angelina's family was poor. I mean, everybody in that village was poor, but her family was very poor. She had some health problems, so they spent a good portion of their their precious few resources on medicine for her. Anyway, on that occasion, I was there with a friend, and it was February. It was the beginning of the corn harvest there. And so we got boiled sweet corn on the cob, and a little bit later we got corn tortillas with some beans, and a little while later we got roasted corn on the cob, and finally this thick corn drink that they call a toll. And somewhere in the midst of this evening, Angelina said something in Kanhobal, that's the native language, they used it whenever they didn't want us to understand what they were saying, said something to her little daughter Maria, and Maria disappeared for a few moments, and when she came back, she brought two warm Coca-Colas for us to drink. Two warm Coca-Colas that they couldn't grow or produce themselves, but that they had to purchase with money that was very hard for them to come by. Two warm Coca-Colas, which they would not have bought for themselves, but that were offered as special gifts to their guests. I experienced that kind of generosity many, many times during the time that I lived in Mexico and Guatemala. Whether it was killing one of the chickens to serve lunch to us, or the family of my Mexican friend who showered my own family with gifts the Christmas that they came to visit, or the warm Coca-Colas that would appear alongside our beans and tortillas. Always these symbols of abundance and generosity in places and times where they would not necessarily be expected. Loaves and fish are such symbols in the second half of the first century in Palestine. Another such time or place, with military occupation, with economic hardship for the majority of people, the destruction of the temple, this gathering place of the Jewish people. In this time and place, Matthew, the gospel writer, writes down a story for a community that is living in a time of chaos. The story helps them look backwards. It helps them see themselves in the long view of history, see that God's people have lived before in times of chaos and uncertainty. They have had periods where they didn't know exactly how they were going to survive from one day to the next, and by the grace of God, they did survive. This isn't the only story in their book. They know the one about the Israelites wandering in the wilderness when God provided them with manna, the food they needed for each day. They've heard the story about Elijah replenishing the jar of meal and the jug of oil so that a widow and her child will not die of starvation. And the one about Elisha, who also multiplies the loaves so that 20, what would feed 20 now feeds 100. These are stories they hear and they know, and those stories echo in this one that Matthew writes that takes place in the nearer past, within some 50 years of when this community is living, a story from that first community of Jesus' disciples. They have been following him for a while. There are crowds that gather. Some people are listening to him, others aren't. There's opposition to Jesus. There's some criticism. There are threats of violence. And they get word that John, the well-known prophet, the one they call John the Baptist, has been murdered by Herod. And when Jesus hears this, that's the way our passage started out this morning. When Jesus hears this, he goes away to a deserted place. That news, it seems, is very sobering, and he needs a bit of time alone. But it's not long before a great crowd hears and follows and catches up with him. And whether his disciples reach him first or whether they come along later, in any case, they are there as the day is coming to a close, and they are realizing that people haven't eaten yet, and they don't have any way to feed them. Or at least they think they don't. And that, of course, is the miracle. You know, whether we believe that 5 loaves and 2 fish in the hands of Jesus instantly become 5,000 loaves, or whether we believe that Jesus' presence and witness inspired everyone to bring out what they had, the little they had to share, or whatever other interpretation we may give to the actual events of that day, the miracle is that where people see scarcity, Jesus offers abundance. The miracle is Jesus' attitude, what someone has called his attitude of audacious abundance. Abundance of bread and abundance of life. It's a kind of in-your-face abundance. You give them something to eat. The kingdom of heaven is like this tiny little mustard seed. It's the littlest of all the seeds, but it grows to be this huge shrub and a tree. The kingdom of heaven is like the king who threw a great big banquet for his son. You give them something to eat. Share the feast. Matthew's community looks back to a time when other people of faith, perhaps as hungry, as hurting, as seemingly helpless as they, were sustained into new life. But the story doesn't only help them to look backwards. It also reminds them to look forward to what is coming. We remember that these are people who believe that the end is near, that God is coming and will break into history really any day now and make all things right. Biblical scholars, the ones who spend their life studying the Bible, would say the feeding of the 5,000 prefigures the eschatological banquet. The rest of us would say it gives us a glimpse of God's vision. We don't see it fully, we can't understand it all, but we know that it has something to do with feeding hungry people, with caring for those who are ill. It has something to do with everyone being welcome. And so Matthew's community can take heart, and communities later on can take heart that a new day, God's day, will come. Slaves 150 years ago could sing, "I'm going to eat at the welcome table," even while they suffered horrific treatment. And people like us, who live, again, in a time of uncertainty, of confusion, a time when we might walk into the job we've held for 15 years and be told that our position's been terminated, a time when we read that 90 million people in our country have no health insurance, or that millions of people from Iraq to Indonesia to Southern Africa suffer the consequences of war and drought and famine, a time when our church, our big church, like all mainline churches, has lost power and influence in the last several decades, people like us who are struggling to be faithful and figure out what's the mission that God has for us today, we can take heart. We can look back and we can look forward and see that God is present and God is providing. And of course, it's not just bread that satisfies physical hunger that we're talking about here, but also the longing and the hunger for compassion, for encouragement, for mercy, for connection. On Thursday, the 19th of April of this year, 3 days after a student had opened fire and killed 33 students and faculty on the campus of Virginia Tech, Larry Hinker walked up to the podium in the room on that campus that had been converted into a press room. Larry Hinker is the Associate Vice President for University Relations at Virginia Tech and was the person responsible for talking with the press during those sad and gruesome days. By that Thursday, he was looking pretty tired. He leaned on the podium. His right hand shook as he spoke. Sometimes it was hard to hear him even a few rows back. He addressed the media as friends, some of them by now very familiar to him. "How do we go on from here?" he asked, quite literally, in terms of how to logistically best go about relaying information to the news media from then on. But of course, the question went deeper. How do we go on from here? The room fell into total silence. It was clear that the reporters were taken aback by his sincere frankness and his effort to work with them as best he could, despite his tired, beaten demeanor. Maybe 20 seconds passed until someone replied, "You're doing a good job." And the room broke into applause. And for a few moments, one of those reporters said, they all reminded themselves that though they are aggressive, that's their job, they can and must appreciate each other, mostly perhaps because no one knows what is going to happen next. We long to know that no matter what happens next, we are held and sustained by something greater than ourselves, greater than our responsibilities, greater than the demands that are made on us. And so general assemblies of our church and weekly worship are opportunities to remind ourselves of what we know at our core, that God's love is abundant. God's care for the whole human being, physical, emotional, mental, and spiritual, is deep and unending. And so we tell these stories about God, stories like the one from Matthew, stories like the one I read on the General Assembly website about a church somewhere that generally worships on Maundy Thursday over a potluck meal with communion woven in. They had studied Luke's version of this story a few weeks earlier in a Bible study, and the idea came to the worship chair to ask everyone to bring five of something and two of something. So five pieces of cake, two sandwiches, five deviled eggs, two pieces of fried chicken. At the end of the service, they discovered that everyone had eaten their fill and there were plenty of leftovers. Some of them had been a bit anxious earlier in the day about whether there would be enough food, but they needn't have worried. We tell the stories like that of Brownlee Congregational Church in the Eastern Cape province of South Africa, which between its mother church and 30 outstations numbers about 1,100 people. It's a church that we're related to through our global ministries. And last year, that church began a pilot project at one of its outstations to raise 1,000 day-old chicks to mature and then sell them to local processors at a profit. Some of the proceeds are used by the women of the church in their ministry with those affected by HIV/AIDS, by which they distribute food parcels, provide counseling services, and offer skills training to people. Some of the profits go to purchase seeds for community gardens at 3 public schools and to families in 10 communities in that area for small subsistence garden plots. And some of the proceeds from the chicks is building churches in 3 outstations where congregations worship in the homes of parishioners and therefore are very limited in the number who can participate. In that place, the loaves and the fishes are seeds from North Carolina, some day-old chicks, and the work of men and women and children of the church. We tell stories, and we look around this community and witness God's love and nurturing. We get a glimpse of God's vision right here, where people who might not ever cross paths anywhere else reach for the same glass of lemonade or paint a wall side by side on a Saturday morning. We are given a story in this place, in this congregation, and in every congregation, wherever people gather together and share the feast of God's abundance, where black and white, Asian and Hispanic, rich and poor, male and female, gay and straight, young and old, find that what unites us is far greater than whatever would divide us. And where all of this assortment of humanity remembers the stories. And because we remember, and because we have a vision of what will someday be, we bring the little that we have to offer. Our bread, our pair of fish, our warm Coca-Cola, and God takes our offerings and blesses them and breaks and gives us to each other and to those we will never meet but who are part of us. That's what these stories do. These reminders, this looking back and looking forward, strengthens us for mission. It inspires and empowers us to share the feast, both here and beyond our walls, sending us out as Jesus went, from the church and into the countryside, or into the city streets, or the suburban parks, or the neighborhoods of New Orleans, or the refugee camps of the Sudan, taking our loaves, our fish, our dollars in the offering plate, our 2 hours a week that we have to volunteer, our words, our gestures, our hugs, our smiles, taking what little we have and trusting that it is enough. And by the sheer grace of God, it is. Amen.